Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Carla Marink. She is the director of the Community for Learning in the Dominican Republic. Welcome to the podcast, Carla.
Thank you, Dana. I'm really, really happy to be here.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Okay, so I guess when I began teaching, so I became a teacher simply because I spoke English. So they said, here's a textbook, off you go. Mm-hmm. And I got thrown into secondary language arts classrooms. And the way that they taught me to teach was basically to take the textbook, divide the number of pages by 180 days. And there I had my long-term planning and I better stick to it. Uh-huh. And so we were, you know, using the textbooks and the principal would walk in and say, I see in your lesson plan that you're on page 85 and you're supposed to be on page 98. What's going on? Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, well, the last story was really difficult. It took them time to get it. You know, we had to take, spend a little more time, but that was not acceptable. And so I was really frustrated. I wanted to work through reading and writing workshop, which I knew about. I wanted some creative freedom and I really wanted to be able to differentiate for my students. I saw very quickly how the students were all at different levels. And I was like, well, I can't meet their needs by plowing through a textbook like this. And I went on for about 9 or 10 years teaching like that. And then, or maybe less, yeah, 6 years, 7 years. And then my son went into first grade and I began to see him going through the same thing, sitting in desks in a row, doing what the teacher said. And I said, I just can't do this anymore. I could maybe do it for me, but not for my kids. So in 1989, we, two friends and I, decided to start a school. We started with 11 students. It was tough. We had no money. And we basically thought we would just do sort of a homeschooling with 20 or 30 kids and get them to 12th grade and then close the school. I guess we hit a nerve at the time, or, you know, people wanted that because we grew quite quickly and it was fun. We taught with no textbooks at all. We gave no grades in elementary. It was all just, we did narrative reports and we taught through activities and projects that followed the students' interests. Reading and writing workshop. And it was such an adventure. It was really, really great. It was tough in many ways, but it took me out of that area that I was in before. And I've never looked back. I've never regretted it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you've lived in the Dominican Republic for quite a while now, correct?
32 years now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. And so yeah. You founded another school there. That kind of, you said you used, you started kind of using after school programs and summer camps at the beginning to start the school, but you started basically with no money at all. So tell me a little bit about the story of founding the Community for Learning.
Well, okay, so we, when a friend and I decided we really wanted to do this, she was not enjoying her experience at school either. And her daughters were having some issues at school. So she also wanted to do this. And we decided to start the project. But then I started sort of crunching the numbers. And I was like, we don't have any savings. We don't have any money. We can't do this. And then a friend came over. We were sitting having a drink and she was asking me what's up. And I told her about my school idea that I had just dumped because we didn't have money. And she said, oh, I have a little bit in savings and I've always wanted to do something like that. So let me join you guys. And so she brought in her bit of money and then we did. We worked summer camps. We did after school programs. We did everything we could to bring in enough money to pay for the day school that we had. And then slowly, we didn't take wages for the first 3 or 4 years. And then slowly we came out of that and we were able to. And then we also faced how do you accredit your school? All of these things that we knew nothing about. So we just, you know, we learned by experience, basically. Every little thing that we came up against, we like, oh, something new to learn. It was an adventure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that was a school that was gradeless, as you said. But you told me in the pre-chat that the government wanted you to submit grades to them. So yes. How did that go kind of with the Ministry of Education and talking about, you know, the going gradeless despite what Dominican
report. So what we did was we handed out report cards that were, they were, I guess now you would call them standards grade-based. We had continuums for reading and writing, and we put the kids on those continuums so we could see where they were. And then we gave narrative reports to the parents, so it was very clear where their child was, where they were having difficulty, what they needed to work on. Those are pretty easy to turn into grades because you know which kids are the A students, the B students, the C students, falling along that range. And so we handed in to the ministry those grades, but the parents never saw them. And the reason being, we didn't want the parents or the kids to be focused on the grades. We wanted them to truly focus on the learning, which I can tell you worked very well. Mm-hmm. And then when we got, when we grew to sixth grade, because we began with first through third grade, and then each year added a grade. When we got to seventh grade, we became aware that, well, one day we're going to have to hand out transcripts to these kids, and they are going to need grades. So we thought it was best to start training the kids in seventh and eighth grade to know what grades actually meant. And we were naive enough to believe that these kids would just love learning and the numbers wouldn't bother them and it would be okay. And that was just completely wrong. We were so wrong. The numbers meant everything. The moment they entered seventh grade and began getting numbers, their focus switched. They no longer took risks. They no longer got excited about trying new things. They wanted to know, is this going to be on the test? Will this count for my grade? And the grades, truly what I saw was a student who was normally a B student all the time now got labeled as a B student and knew it. And suddenly lost their self-esteem as far as being a student went. And it was sad to see that. So we've been working, trying to find ways to go gradeless and still give out a transcript. And that has been our, for the past 5-6 years, that's what we've been working on.
And so you all have been in existence for, I think you told me, about 22 years now.
Yeah, 23 years. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you told me at that time, right, there was no Twitter PLN. And so how did you find some of your staff? And you know, was it just people you knew and it kind of grew from that, or you had families that were interested?
Okay, so we got our students by word of mouth, people. And I have to tell you, some of the students we got in the beginning had severe learning disabilities. And, you know, people don't trust you in a new school very easily. And they come because they need help. Mm-hmm. But we were small, so we were able to give them a lot of help. And the children advanced and got much stronger. And that, of course, gave us word of mouth to other parents. Well, wow, my kid's doing really well in this school. Mm-hmm. So it grew that way. And then for teachers, I guess word just got around that if you want to try different things, if you want to be able to explore and experiment in teaching, this is a school to be in. And it's still, we still get that. I get teachers coming in and saying, I've heard that if I work here, I can try new things. I can learn a lot. And they come on board because of that.
Okay. Yeah. So interesting kind of how you kind of started that from scratch and right. And it worked with the grading, I would say challenges when the kids got to seventh grade and, you know, right. And keeping with that, not wanting, you know, to have them label themselves. Cause that it, when you see kids get to be that age, that is they're very focused on that.
Well, and they're vulnerable at that age, you know? So, yeah, it's a constant struggle and we're working with it. Basically for me, even looking at standards-based grading, anything, it still labels kids. It's still something. The only thing I found that works is student self-assessment. So we have been really, really pushing for student self-assessment right now. And we're moving towards eventually that they will be the ones assessing themselves and they will just meet with the teachers to let them know why and discuss those grades and come up with them. But since we've done student self-assessment, I no longer get kids coming to my office and saying, Carla, the teacher hates me. Look, I never get more than an 80. And I work so hard because now they know why they're getting the grades. And they know it's not because the teacher hates them. It's because they just haven't developed in that area and they're giving themselves the grade. And as most teachers who let kids self-assess realize, they're harder on themselves than teachers ever are. So that puts the teachers in the beautiful position of saying, what? You think you deserve an 85 on this? Why? Look at this, 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 and this that you've done. This is an excellent piece of work. This is a 90, a 95 level of work. And, you know, I mean, this isn't just a number out of the top of their head. We have rubrics and everything, but they're able to give the kids very positive feedback. And instead of feeling upset about the grades, the kids are positive about their grades. And that's sort of the best thing, that the best solution so far that we found.
Yeah, it seems like, you've had a lot of trial and error, right? So and that's working right now. So let's move into a little bit about the student-led learning. You focus on their area of passion and tell me kind of what you learned coming out of remote learning this year and how they're able to push their passions forward in that student-led learning.
Okay, so well, coming out of remote learning was a... it was tough. So, very much we expected, we thought kids are going to be happy to come back to school, happy to see each other. And they were. But then it became quickly very evident that they had lost all of their ability to focus. Mm-hmm. They had been laying in bed doing their work and were not exactly thrilled to be getting up in the morning and coming to school and sitting in classrooms all day. And I think that their behavior just seemed a little off, the way they spoke to each other, the way they were doing things. I think a lot of teachers, then the reaction was to try to put them back in that box where they used to be. And those kids were not going back in the box. They just didn't want to. And it was very difficult. And it began to seem like we were having huge behavioral issues. I won't say huge, but that there were behavioral issues. When in actual fact, I think it was simply that the kids no longer saw what was relevant about what they were doing, no longer saw the meaning of school and needed to have that. And so we began in January. First of all, in September to December, we focused mainly on getting the love of reading back. Our kids had stopped reading. Our school has quite a strong culture of reading. And we were surprised that in just a year and a half, they completely lost it. So we had to bring that back. And teachers were frustrated because kids couldn't focus on their reading for more than 2 or 3 minutes, and they didn't want to read anymore. So what they did, and what I find interesting is many teachers came to this conclusion without us getting together and talking about it. They were already just starting to do it. They had the kids only read in class. They read for 3 minutes to begin with, and then they just kept adding minutes, and then doing a lot of sharing. What did you like about your book? Sharing good sentences, just sharing the excitement of reading. And by December, the kids were reading, depending on their grade level, 20 to 30 minutes without a problem. And then other teachers who were not language arts teachers were noticing that ability to focus was transferring to the other classes, to their math classes, to their science classes. So by January, the kids were able to work a little bit better. Then we decided to harness what they had learned in remote learning, because those kids did not come back. A lot of people say there was learning loss. Well, maybe for some of the content, but I really felt that they had learned to be very independent, that they knew how to help themselves learn in many of them, not all of them, but many of them had better time management skills than they had had before because they were on their own at home doing the work. And so we decided that instead of putting them back in a position where the teacher told them everything to do and taking away that independence, we should move with it. And we started, many of our teachers, not all of them, many of them started with student-led learning and letting them take charge of what they're doing. It's organized. And what the teachers are saying is that the kids are doing the content on their own, but the mini lessons that the teachers give tend to be more of the life skills, tend to be more of how do you organize yourself? How do you manage your time? How do you work collaboratively in a group? How do you speak to each other politely? These are the kinds of things that we are that we seem to be teaching more and the kids are taking control of their content, you know, either through kind of flipped class style, although they're doing nothing at home, it's in the classroom, but they are in charge of when they learn it, how they want to show their learning, and making a lot of choices. And the first teacher who began doing this was our ninth grade language arts teacher. And I can tell you that class was probably our noisiest, kind of most difficult class to settle down and get to work. And half of them just didn't want to work. When she began working this way from day one, there was this hum of activity in the classroom. They were just on for the hour and 10 minutes she has them in class, they were working. And I got so many, I interviewed them about what was going on. They were so, so happy to be working in this way. They were so motivated. And it's been 2 months now, and I see them, I've gone in and re-interviewed them. They still want to keep working this way, and they're still very, very, very engaged. So I guess, you know, my blog post is called The Teaching Experiment, because I really feel that in teaching, we are constantly experimenting, seeing what works, if it works, going more in that path. And since this worked so well, lots of teachers are now starting to find different ways to do student-led learning in the classroom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You talked to me a little bit in the pre-chat about a poem called The Portal. And it's kind of you said it was about the pandemic portal and how we are leaving it behind and walking through the light a little bit. What does that mean to you in terms of this transition you guys have made at your school this year?
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Okay, so when we came back from, you know, I realized that the kids need something different. This can't go on. And, you know, I think every educator realized long before the pandemic that education was having some serious problems and we needed to make changes. But after the pandemic, it was so clear. It was like the pandemic just put this big spotlight on everything that we were doing wrong and we needed to change. And the poem that you're talking about is by Arundhati Roy. She wrote an article, and the end of the article has been turned into a spoken word poetry. It's called The Pandemic is a Portal. And at the end, she talks, it just gives me goosebumps. She talks about we can walk through this portal, dragging the carcasses of our, you know, of our dead rivers and of our hatred for other people and all these things with us, or we can let that go, walk through lightly and fight for a better world, ready to fight for a better world. And that's how I felt, that we needed to be ready to fight for a different education. And I think that I consider myself a bit of a fighter, but in a mild way in the past. Now I really want to get in there and make some strong, strong changes that I think we need to do for the kids. Through the when the kids were remote, we did a lot of damage to our kids. And we can't let that happen anymore. We can't be damaging our kids. We have to find ways to support them, to move them forward, to empower them as best we can. And so I wanted to start thinking about change. But, you know, when you talk to teachers about change in a time when they are completely overwhelmed and tired and ready to quit, well, if you say, now let's change things, they're going to say, goodbye, Carla. I don't want to work for you anymore. So we just left it. And then in January, we shared the poem, The Pandemic is a Portal, and started talking to them about letting go of things. She said, let go of things and walk through the portal lightly. So what can we let go of? What can we stop doing as teachers? And we started focusing on that. And then now what we've been doing is, rather than going in with ideas for change, we thought this would be best if it came from the students. And so we've started a student-led think tank, and they are, there's seven students. They range from ninth through 11th grade. And we chose sort of half boys, half girls. We chose a student who really dislikes school. We chose another one who thinks school is great, but she wants things a little more traditional. We kind of got kids from all areas of thinking, but all of them are strong thinkers. All of them are very motivated. So we asked them to come together and put together a vision board for the future of the school. And I tasked them with imagine the impossible. Just imagine the impossible. It doesn't have to be things we can do. Let's look at what we can't do. Just imagine the most wonderful school you could imagine, even if it seems impossible, because that will allow us to see what you want and take the steps to get there. So they've spent the last few weeks, they have been interviewing all the classes. They go into the classes on their own. They talk to the kids and then they interview them about their ideas and what they would want. This coming week, they're going to be interviewing a group of parents, I think about 16 parents that they've invited in. And then they will be interviewing the teachers, a group of teachers. And once they put all of their ideas together, they will be presenting that to our teachers in our professional development. And they're going to be presenting to our entire parent community. We have a thing called community coffee. So they will be hosting that and they're going to present their findings and their ideas to the community. And then we're taking some of the ideas that they've come up with. We already have picked a few that we know we have to do, and we will be implementing them next year. And then that will be our, you know, our roadmap for growth that we're hoping to use. It's been very exciting. The kids are so motivated. I think they become leaders. They are just incredible. They're incredible. And then when we see this happening, so I'm working with another teacher on this, Lorena, and Lorena said the other day, you know, this is really truly PBL in action. These kids have taken it on. They're not getting a grade for it. This has nothing to do with school. And they're putting more effort into this than any of their other assignments. So we are thinking, you know, like if we could grab that kind of energy and use it, it would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see the outcome. Do you have updates about this on your school's website? When it's going to be presented and shared, is that going to be?
I will be putting it out there. I'll be writing a blog post about what's. I've started writing a blog post. I don't want to put anything out until the kids have done their thing because I want them to share first. But I'm writing a blog post about the entire process because it's been fascinating. And then I want to write a post about what their findings are because I think they're coming up with some really great ideas.
Okay, great. So yeah, that should be up when this episode comes out. So it'll be exciting to hear how that goes. And yeah, it's definitely, it's great when kids are taking ownership and you got them really excited about, you know, getting this vision board together from all the constituents, the students in classes, the teachers, being able to put this all together to present to the staff. Talk to me a little bit about, you wrote a blog post as well, Can Administrators Go Gradeless? And kind of what you would advise an administrator, whether they're in an existing school or starting a new school, in terms of going gradeless, because so often we tie teacher evaluations to assessments, depending on the state and the area, but how can administrators do this confidently?
So When I was teaching, they would come in with this list of criteria twice a year, I think they were supposed to do it. And we knew when they were coming in and we basically faked it while they were there. And then, or some people did, especially. And then they would come and give us grades on everything we did. And there was an enormous amount of criteria that they were looking at. When I started the school and I looked at those kinds of teacher assessments, I realized it was kind of an impossible thing to do well, especially just in one sitting. But I also felt that, you know, teachers are extremely hard on themselves. So if you have a criteria and you're giving them a grade from 1 to 4 on something, mm-hmm. and you give them 4s, they're happy with that. But even if you give them a 3, which is a pretty darn good grade, they'll beat themselves up about it, or they'll ask questions about it. So why did I get a 3 on there? How can I get better? Teachers are so incredibly hard on themselves. And I think if we are asking teachers to try so many new things, we're asking them to try to be, to do PBL, to do the NGSS curriculum now, which is, you know, it's a big learning curve. We're asking them to let kids self-assess. We're asking them to change to standards-based grading and do on-the-fly assessment. These are big, big changes. If we walk into a classroom and we plop ourselves down with our computer and stare at them and take notes on their teaching, this is frightening. It's very scary, and it does not lead to risk-taking. You're not going to go stand there and try something new while somebody's evaluating you, because it might not work out and then your evaluation will be poor. So it takes away risk-taking. I think it really goes against the idea of a growth mindset. And in the end, my feeling is everything we do in professional development, everything we do in teacher assessment, everything we do should reflect what we would like to see in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And if we don't want them to just be sitting there grading students on what they do, but having conversations with them and allowing them to tell them what they think, then that's absolutely what we must do with teachers as well. So I found that just sitting with them and saying, hey, what did you like about your class? Tell me what went well. I can tell you, of all the teachers I've talked to, so many of them have a hard time identifying what they like about their class or what went well. And I don't let them jump. They'll say, oh, but let me tell you about what I want to make better. Let's work on that. And I'm like, no. You must tell me what you like. We have to look at your strengths, because we build on strengths. So they do. And then I get to tell them all the other things I saw. So it's a very positive beginning. And then when we move into, okay, those were your glows, now your grows. What would you like to improve on? And they can give me a list that goes on forever. Mm-hmm. And you can't improve on all those things at once. You can only choose one or two things, the priorities, and work on those and move forward. And I think by doing assessment in that way, by making it a self-assessment piece, teachers also feel empowered. And then when they feel that way, they realize that how their students feel when they give them that same, that same opportunity. And I think, I just really didn't like the way I was assessed when I was in school. And I didn't like the feeling of being judged, and I don't want to do that to my teachers. So the way that we work allows them to, when they're trying something new, to say, hey, Carla, I'm trying this new thing out. Come into my classroom and see what you think. Mm-hmm. And they don't feel uncomfortable not making it, if you see what I mean. They don't mind if there's a failure, so to speak. They feel okay with it. And that allows them to grow. That allows them to try new things. That doesn't mean that if a teacher is really doing poorly, that we're just going to let them, do damage to the students. I mean, then if we're seeing that something's not going well in the classroom, we will have a sit-down conversation with the teacher and make sure they know some things have to change if they want to continue. But that doesn't happen very often. And it happens less when they feel empowered.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and still today there are not enough directors or principals who want to, push the teachers to try new things, right? I hear that from guests that I've had on the podcast, and I think in a lot of schools in general, the principals are so focused on completing those evaluations, right? Checking, mm-hmm. right? And there's, like you said, a lot of teachers are worried about failing, and well, if I try something new, it might fail, right? Yeah. But we're all about pushing ourselves to learn more.
And I know that I'm in a bubble. I'm in a very different position than a principal in a school, in a public school in the States. I have a lot of freedom to try these things, but I think we need a grassroots movement towards change, because it works. And what's being done in those traditional formats doesn't work as well, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
We need to start pushing for those kind of changes,
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you online and read your blog and connect with you?
Okay. So my blog is theteachingexperiment.com. On Twitter, I'm just Carla Mayrink. And that's where I hang out a lot. I love Twitter, so I'm there a lot. And they can always write to me. My email is carla@tcfl.edu.do.
Okay.
And I'm on Facebook. I have the Teaching Experiment on Facebook as well.
Okay, great. I'll put those in the show notes. Out of everything we talked about, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I guess I would say that if we empower our teachers, they can empower our kids. So whatever we want our students to feel. As administrators, we need to be able to do that for our teachers as much as possible. And that includes self-assessment, student-led learning, and teacher-led learning, of teachers leading their own learning in the classroom and students learning for themselves. So I think anything we want to see in the classroom, we have to model. I think that's just the most important thing.
Yeah, I think so too, right? You can't just say, I want to see this. It's actually showing them how to do it and letting them experiment. Well, it's been great having you on the podcast and learning more about your school and the founding of your school and what you all are doing now as we move out of the pandemic. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dana.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.